This is the Roaring Elephant Podcast, and here I am with my big-brained co-host, Jon. Hello, Jon.
Hello, Dave. I'd have to say something intelligent now, I think, so, oops. But I'm not the only one with the oopses.
Yes, unless you've been living under a rock, and even then you probably would still know about this. There's been a little bit of an oopsie out there in the world for anyone running Windows and using CrowdStrike, the very popular endpoint security tooling. Used to have just over 20% of the market, I believe.
Does someone actually use CrowdStrike? I mean, typically everything is safe and you don't need security, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure that's how that works, actually. Never mind. There's been a million things, million articles written out there. As I say, it's fairly popular at the moment. And, what could we do but hop right onto that bandwagon and ride it as far as we can?
We didn't. We were responsible adults. We waited for a week for things to calm down, for actual information to become available, so we could actually talk about something real and not just the hype wagon thing. So responsible journalism here.
We did actually record our previous episode on CrowdStrike Day. I wonder if that'll become a new holiday. We did indeed decide to hold off a week so we could wait for, you know, some actual sort of autopsy results. They don't call them autopsies, they call them post-incident reviews, PIRs. We wanted to see exactly how this all played out, because on the day, obviously, it was absolute carnage everywhere that was impacted, and there were a lot of places impacted.
Yeah, unfortunately, nobody speculated about anything. Everybody was so...
Oh, yeah. I mean, the internet was very calm about the whole thing. Yeah, definitely. There were no memes made, no funny jokes. It was all just very business as usual. Yeah, no. Anyway, so I think, as I say, unless you've been living under a rock, you probably know popular endpoint security tool CrowdStrike released a update to their an update to their database. That's not the word I'm thinking of.
But, no, it's called the rule set.
That's it, so, rules engine, yeah. Or rule set. Sorry, rule set. Set that's evaluated by their tooling.
Because it's for like a couple of kilobytes big. It was really, really small.
Yeah, nothing that small could do any damage, right?
Ever stepped on the nail?
Okay. Something that small could do damage. Yeah. This wasn't a software update. This was a data update.
Configuration-ish, more like rule sets configuration. Yeah. But again, it was a software update because it's part of a software package. And the first guesstimations were that it was the Windows update system was going to be the culprit there, because Windows is bad, because Microsoft is bad, blah, blah, blah. Hmm. But apparently it wasn't. Now, CrowdStrike has released a bunch of FAQs and I don't know what you call it, explanations and the peer report and things like that. But they have publicly said that it was not due to Microsoft at all. Yep. The problem was also on the day that Microsoft actually had an outage on a big part of their DevOps services, which was purely coincidental, apparently. Had nothing to do with the CrowdStrike thing. There's no further information about that, but I mean, CrowdStrike just says, yeah, had nothing to do with us. I guess we can believe them there. Yeah, if they could share the blame, they would, I think.
I think so. So rather than kind of rehash exactly what happens, because I'm sure everyone is kind of all over that by now, I think I'd rather spend some time trying to answer some of the questions that I still have open. As Jon mentioned, we'll put some links into the show notes of some of the articles and some of the things that we found most useful when digging into some of this of what actually happened and a bit less of the sensationalist stuff. But I think the first question that I had is, when you look at anything that certainly CrowdStrike has put out on this since, the number one thing that they talk about in order to make sure this doesn't happen again is sort of dramatically increased testing before they do any form of updates. But this seemed to impact almost every single machine it touched. So I don't quite understand how this wasn't caught in some way, shape or form in the first place, with any form of testing.
Yeah, that's a good question. Because also if you look at stuff they published on the things that will improve their testing, it all sounds like, okay, but why weren't you doing this already? Yeah. Or were things like, we will improve or make better thing? But I mean, this wasn't an edge case situation. I mean, sure, sometimes an edge case pulls through and only if you have 50,000 of these running at the same time, something goes wrong. Sure,
yeah.
That's hard to fix in testing because you can't test for everything. You have to be realistic there. QA is very important, typically underfunded. But this had a 100% mortality rate. Any kind of deployment should have felt that. Mm. Now, I'm not sure if I want to go into what I think happened territory here, because we have no proof of that. But what I noticed is that they had two deployment models. Mm. On the one hand, they have the update system of the sensor itself, Falcon. Mm. And that is the normal software deployment. And they do that, I think, the way you should do it, by first. I think the dates, I was actually surprised by it. I think they mentioned that the last sensor version was finished in February, dogfooded for a month internally, then went out to a couple of beta people that signed up for the latest, greatest, so they could test stuff, and actually doing a rolling rollout. Is that how it works? I don't know. A phased rollout, that's what I mean to say. Just to make sure that, okay, the more people using it, more people testing it, the more bugs come out. And that's basically why you never install a version 0.0 of anything. You just wait for the other people to find all the bugs, and you wait for version 1.2. And that's where in production you typically go with an N-1, N-2 kind of rollout thing. And that makes sense. That worked, and they did not have any issues with that, apparently, at least not that we know of. However, in this case, the rule sets, the artifacts, they have a different name for it, the rapid response content, and they call it the rapid response content because it's, well, I think they use the word twice, because on the one hand, they use it in documentation here and there to say, this is stuff we need to put out quickly because it's for rapid response kind of stuff. But on the other hand, if you read in the details, it's the stuff that contains the response actions. Because within these solutions, typically they have antivirus, ransomware protection kind of stuff, rule sets going on. But they also have components that allow a central location to isolate the host from the network, download a memory dump, execute a killer process, things like that. And those are also rapid responses. And from what I read, it's actually not clear if, because for me, these response actions don't warrant an out-of-cycle release. Because you're talking about 5-6 functionalities, that's a normal software function, should happen with a sensor update. And when they talk about what went wrong, it was actually about a specific vulnerability checking on named pipes in Windows. If you want more details, go into the logs yourself. So that's actually a detection rule. So for me, I think it's called rapid response because it's meant to be a, well, we found this new thing on the internet that's causing issues. We need to have something to capture that, and that has to go out very quickly.
Yeah.
From that point of view, they kind of decided not to use the standard, normal, dogfooding phase rollout situation for that, but just create the thing, push it out. And the thing for me that is the main culprit of all the problems is the control or lack thereof of the end users of this thing.
Yeah.
Because the sensor rollout, that's just, hey, there's an update. Do you want to install it? Yes or no? And that goes to your normal, as a user of a product, goes to your normal Q&A, dev test, whatever you want to do with that. You can decide internally yourself, me as an IT manager of my organization to first roll it out on these couple of less important systems. And if I'm happy with it, after a week, roll it out further. These rapid response things are simply pushed by CrowdStrike and installed without any kind of interaction.
Yeah.
And that's an important thing to understand, because I've seen a lot of reactions on the internet where people say, okay, CrowdStrike is not to blame because the people who are running this thing should have done their due diligence.
Yeah. I mean, that was my initial question back on the previous Friday. Mm-hmm. But I also caveated that I know enough about InfoSec tools to know that sometimes there's no user control given on some things, and this appears to be one of those things. Like, it's just, and my guess on that is the reason why they just push these things, these updates out with no checking, is it must have been their belief that nothing they ever did in these definitions, rule sets, call them what you like, could ever actually cause a problem of this order of magnitude. Like, the worst, my guess is that their worst case before last Friday was that they shipped a rule set or whatever they call a definition set, whatever they call them, that was somehow corrupted or didn't work or couldn't be read by the engine or by the agent, and by that point it would just go, okay, well, I'm dead. But
yeah, it would crash the agent.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, crash the agent, or the agent just goes, hey, sorry, no rule set here. I'll sit here and wait until you update me with an actual rule set. But even with that being said, Murphy's Law, I think, if anything can go wrong, it will. Just because that's what you think the worst case is, that's really not a sensible position to take with something like this. Clearly, hindsight's it's a wonderful thing here, and we're kind of speaking from a point of having seen the dramatic impact this has had. But I get the point around rapid response. I get the point of you're trying to counter, some sort of wildly active phone, apparently, that's just bingle binging at me.
Yes, people should put their phones on mute when recording a podcast.
I know. It's the first time for a long time, actually, that I've forgotten to do that. But here we go. It's the train of thought that I've completely lost now. I get that they're trying to mitigate a very virulent, situation that occurs with something that no one has seen before, and all of a sudden it starts taking over the world and installing Skynet, and about to launch all the nuclear weapons. But what was that? The Matrix. But either way, that doesn't mean that you can't, at the very least, roll it out internally first, or do some semblance of automated testing. Just if they'd done any testing with this particular update, it would have caught it. Any testing at all, because the machine would have just blue screen of death immediately. It's not even when you reboot it doesn't come up, or it was just install it, machine dead. I think that is unconscionable. This is not something that should be happening in this day and age. We're much smarter than this.
They were assumptions. They made assumptions, and when you make an assumption, because you said this couldn't potentially break anything, right? And I mean, it's also, to be honest, bad software, because the blue screen of deaths were caused by an unhandled exception. Now, if you're a developer, exceptions happen when you do bad things in code, and typically there's something called exception handling. Now, for a lot of software, if it's a website or a calculator or I don't know what else, and you have an exception, the program crashes, I'll start it again, who cares? This stuff are kernel adjacent, at least, or actual kernel modules, which this one was not, I think, but still, it is to attach to the core of the system. And the Microsoft Windows kernel is, you don't let your kids out after dark in that environment. It's a dangerous place, which only means that you have to be extra, extra careful. Mm. And capturing exceptions, even if you only do is log ahead this exception, I don't know what to do with it, and gracefully exit your program. Mm. You should have a capture all cases exception handling, which is 3, 4, 5 lines of code at most. And again, not a nice thing to do. You should capture the exception and do something with the exception and fix it and not have the exception in the first place.
Yeah.
That's utopic. That's never, you'll always have something you haven't foreseen, but have exception handling in there. If that was there, it potentially, I mean, if it's there, I wouldn't see how this would cause blue screens if you caught the exception, because the exceptions, as far as I could read, it didn't create any buffer overflows, because with a buffer overflow, that's a problem that creates a problem in another program that then potentially crashes and drags the rest with it. This was not the case, as far as I know. It was just an exception. So they could have actually have a safeguard in the software, in the sensor itself. But even then, even if you have all that installed, and even if it's rapid response, you're totally right. At least send it out today internally and tomorrow to the rest of the world. Have some kind of a canary system involved somewhere.
Yeah. Or like, you know, just, and as I say, any testing at all, it seems, would have caught this.
And I mean, there's another way they could have prevented the problem, just checkpointing something. Yeah. I mean, I've written software myself, I've been a developer for a while, and what you do for this kind of stuff, where you know if it crashes and you can get in the boot loop situation, what you do is have a small wrapper around your software. The first thing you do is you put a file somewhere. Then you start loading things, and if everything starts up correctly, you remove the file. Mm. So if during the startup phase of the thing, where the thing actually crashed, it breaks, the file stays there, system reboots, comes up, wants to create file, oh, file already there, let's not do anything because something has gone dramatically wrong. So again, there's different ways of going around this, which are not rocket science at all.
Yeah, the problem with that and this kind of software, though, is that they deliberately don't want it to be easy for you to be able to not start this software. Like, they want to make sure that this
well, they found a way not to start a software.
They want to make sure that endpoint security is running at all times and that it's very, very difficult for you to disable. I'm a terrible developer, everyone. It's common knowledge on this podcast if you've been listening at all. I jokingly call myself world's worst developer. And
so even if he's the worst, he's still the best at something. That's what you have to take home with this.
I'm not quite sure that's how that works, but okay. But yeah, it's just kind of, it's a bit of a wake-up call. And I also wonder now how many organizations are like crossing themselves, praying and sweating ever so slightly while they fix their own kind of testing release procedures and other things in the background, and are just thankful that this wasn't them. I also wonder how many folks are just laughing on the sidelines and are blissfully unaware that actually their software operates in exactly the same way.
I think that actually is okay, because there was a notable lack of ambulance chasing. Once I knew what's happening, I was kind of watching the social media feeds to see, okay, who has either the what's a good word for the word I can't say on a family-friendly podcast? The courage to say, hey, they're bad, we're good. And who is realistic enough to know that, oh God, this could have been us. Because, I mean, CrowdStrike made a boo-boo here, then there's no way around that. But especially considering the speed of software development, the release cycles, how it all becomes more and more complex, more and more things are involved. To be honest, I'm actually surprised this doesn't happen more often. And of course, if it did happen more often, people put more safeguards in place, so it would actually be a good thing perhaps. But I was glad to see that there was no ambulance chasing going on, because for me, that would have been, I will always use ambulance chasing against you, Mr. Ambulance Chaser, when I'm talking to my customers. I will never use something like this to go to my customers and say, oh, see, we are much better than that, because this should have been prevented, could have been prevented. Mm. But yeah, you're only glass houses.
Yeah. So I think you had another observation on this to do with another update that came out for a different operating system. Do you want to kind of share your thought process there?
Yeah, this is something that came up as well in the, I think it was Hacker News, I found it, I think, at first. But you said this should be a wake-up call. Well, apparently it isn't, because CrowdStrike actually had something similar-ish happening a couple of months ago. Now, that was on the Linux environments, and it was not the same thing at all. In this case, there's a lot of information being made public because everybody's waiting to see what's happened, so they have to. That was a Linux environment, so it was a lot more contained, and it didn't actually do boot loops, so it was more easy to fix. But they did, again, have a problem that they crashed the kernel, in this case, the Linux kernel. It's not clear if that was the sensor itself or this rapid response rule set. So I tried to dig, I couldn't really find that, I might have missed it. But it also caused problems there. Now, there have been some discussion there that CrowdStrike was not to blame at all for that one, because it was a problem with the eBPF kernel. And eBPF, Extended Berkeley Kernel Functions, I think it's called, acronym, look it up. It's the way to interact with the Linux kernel in a safe way, so you cannot crash the kernel. And apparently something CrowdStrike did was bad enough, I don't know, to go bypass all the safeguards in eBPF and still had a kernel attack. So in this case, shared responsibility, perhaps eBPF should have protected it.
Yeah.
CrowdStrike should have been more careful, whatever.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. What does matter is that when they had this happen only a couple of months ago, why did they not change their testing setup or revisit or do all the things they're putting in the current FAQs today? Why didn't they do that then? Because it wasn't visible enough, because it didn't affect the stock price. And if you know you're able to crash a Linux kernel, which is actually a pretty good piece of code, pretty resilient. I mean, Linux servers famously run for years, even behind a brick wall sometimes. Windows kernels are way more fragile. So if you were able to do some weird things on a Linux kernel, that should have been a wake-up call at that point. So if there's anything that I blame them for, it would be for that, to have just disregarded something that could have been the canary in a coal mine function for them, which is sad.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the only kind of point I would add to the end of this, from my perspective at least, is, you know, at least something funny came out of this, which is the Southwest Airlines story about the fact that they weren't affected because they were still running all of their systems on Windows 3.1, which I thought was hilarious. Unfortunately, and I'm sorry to kind of tell you all this, their systems aren't actually running on Windows 3.1. The other joke was that it was running Windows 95, also not true, apparently. The only reason that they weren't impacted is Southwest Airlines just don't use CrowdStrike. So they weren't impacted by the problems. And in fact, you know, several of their flights were sort of were in place, and all their systems were still working while all of this chaos and carnage was going on. Of course, it didn't really matter because most of the airports were impacted and were down. So the fact that their systems were up actually didn't, you know, but they were up and they were active and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, sadly, the one funny joke that did circulate quite a bit, it wasn't quite as funny. But never mind. At least we know.
Well, there was the other funny bit about the Uber Eats thingies.
Oh, God. I mean, we talked before we started recording, we talked about the fact that CrowdStrike are obviously clearly putting a lot of information out there right now. There are, you know, three blog posts, we'll link to them at the end, that all kind of basically all say the same thing with a slightly different view or perspective on it. And like, yes, they're titled different things, and yes, they're coming from different angles or whatever, but they're all basically desperately trying to do damage limitation here. And the other thing they tried to do with damage limitation is give a whole bunch of partners and customers $10 Uber Eats vouchers. Didn't go down so well, didn't it, y'all?
Oh, no, I mean, on the one hand, you have like a 100 million of lost revenue on some airlines, and you have $10 Uber Eats certificates. I mean, yeah, that balances out.
I think so. Yeah, that clearly checks out.
If only the Uber Eats hadn't been cancelled before you could use them.
Yeah, apparently it triggered some sort of fraud thing, and therefore all of them were invalidated.
No, this is, of course, social media. We have no proof that this actually happened, but...
Well, I think the other sort of concern was that, like, if you were to use these kind of things, like most of the Uber Eats, as I understand it, delivery drivers would actually not see any money at all. So they'd effectively, if you order something of that low value, like they're basically working for free. So it's kind of shitty thing to do, even for the folks doing the deliveries. Anyway, so it's just. I mean, last Friday, we kind of joked about, well, surely, yeah, no such thing as bad publicity. But, I think CrowdStrike have well and truly...
Stock, actually. It went down pretty dramatically when it happened, obviously. But have they recovered since then?
Well, while Jan's checking that out, I think the other thing that I was positing last week was, which I still firmly believe, is... As I mentioned at the start of the podcast, CrowdStrike has around about 20% of the market of endpoint security. They're very much the dominant player. Like it falls off very rapidly after them. And I would expect this to significantly impact their market share, but only over a 12 to 24 month sort of timeline, really, because most organizations are going to be in a fairly, fairly significant contract. At the renewal time, sure, I'm sure a whole bunch of people will re-evaluate their vendor of choice, because endpoint security really sort of doesn't have a lot of loyalty in my experience. Like people chop and change endpoint security vendors like they change their underwear. It's just not a, yes, there's the pain of rolling out a new agent, but most large corporations are used to that by now. It's just not a big deal. So, yeah, Jan has flashed up the market, the stock market price. It's not looking good, is it?
Well, that's just the last 5 days to see if they recovered. This is the last 30 days.
Oh,
I'm thinking lemmings.
Yeah, it does look a bit like that, doesn't it? Let's go.
So this last part here, that's the previous screen, that's this one.
Oh, good God. So what was its high within the last 30 days?
390.
Wow. So yeah, they've... Yeah, so they...
$150.
Yeah, so they.
I would call that significant.
Yeah, they've near. Well, yeah, they've not done well.
I've heard some people correlated with the Okta hack from a while ago. It had a data loss thing there, and Okta kind of was a good investment opportunity because when it happened, they dunked, and if you bought shares then, they're pretty much back where they were, even higher. This is not that, I think, because being hacked is a thing. But this, I mean, especially for security software, trust is pretty much everything. And it's going to take CrowdStrike a lot of effort to regain that trust. And I'm really questioning myself. I mean, on one hand, yes, they released a lot of information. So from that, the openness was okay. There's a little bit too much real speak in there, but still, I had feared less.
On that particular topic, the one thing I would say is that, and maybe I'm just not that smart, it's very, very likely, but I found the way that a lot of their content was written to be very, very difficult to actually like properly understand what had happened and why. Like it was very deeply technical, and that I didn't have a problem with. It was a combination, I think, of the way it was written, and for me at least, things that I expected to see explained there as to how this all happened, that really, really weren't there. Like, they went into a lot of detail about, you know, how the actual update caused the crash, which is awesome, but they were very, very light when it came onto the topics of things that we've, you know, discussed earlier on, in like the testing and what actual testing did happen and what didn't happen. They explained it, but not particularly well, I don't think. So you're right. They've churned out a lot of content, like pages and pages of detail, including a one-page exec summary for in PDF version for those execs that can't read a web page. But I question whether they over-indexed on detail over readability, maybe, if that makes sense. I don't know. I just... There were a few pieces that I thought were quite good, and a few pieces I thought whoever wrote this is maybe just clearly far smarter than me. But
no, for me, this is US litigation culture. Because if you read all the documents, then they have severely apologized that something happened.
Mm.
At no point have they ever said anything that could indicate they were at fault. And writing documents in to have those two viewpoints represented, that's not done by engineers, that's done by lawyers.
Yeah.
Or ChatGPT, obviously, so. Everything to say these days. But that's for me why the obfuscation is present in any kind of release for this kind of stuff, especially for companies of this size. If you're a small mom and pop shop, it's not that a big thing. You can be sued for $100, who cares? If they get sued, and they will get sued, because not because in necessarily the end users are dissatisfied, which they probably are, but the insurance companies will litigate, because these airlines have insurances on outages because they lost hundreds of millions of dollars on flights being canceled and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. That money has to be insured by insurers, and these insurers, they do one thing, and that's trying to pay out as little as possible, or if possible, have the payout come from somewhere else. And in this case, somewhere else will be CrowdStrike. So whatever they publish, they have to be extremely careful to avoid excessive
litigation.
No, litigationous results, so something like that. Okay, that wasn't English, it is now. And that's why I said I was surprised on how open they actually were. I had expected them to be much more closed, because CrowdStrike, as far as I know, has no open source culture or anything like that. So they have no DNA that would give more to be open about it. So I was surprised at how open they were, but you're totally right. They will never show the back of their mouth. Is that the expression? It's a Dutch expression. I'm not sure if it translates to English. But they will always be a bit hedging their bets, because they know this is lawsuits are going to go for decades after this.
Yeah.
And that's sadly what it is.
Indeed. Indeed. Well, I think at that point.
Yeah, for me, the takeaways is, oops, it happened. Let's hope everybody, not just CrowdStrike, but everybody learns something from it. And we can try better to avoid it happening again.
Yep.
And unless you have another nice closing statement.
Nothing from me.
Then that is all the time Dave, Worst Developer Ever, and me have for today. You can support this podcast. You can become a patron. Please help us keep this in the air. We've done some actual journalism this time, so give us a boost in Patreon subscriptions. We're also on YouTube. You can hit like buttons, subscribe buttons, notification bells. I have no idea what that does, but apparently that's something you need to do if you're on YouTube. And you're also going to go to www.roaringalpha.org. There's links there to the Patreon page, YouTube page, and more information about the podcast. After all that, if your computer is still working in some way or fashion, you can also send an email to podcast@roaringalpha.org. Let us know what you think about this content. And if you have anything else you want us to talk about, let us know. Until next time, my name is Bootloop Jon.
And my name is, I'm going to go and listen to AC/DC's Thunderstruck, Dave.
And we look forward to talking to you again next week. Goodbye.
See you then.